Thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's a great pleasure. I'm going to get back to the dogged business of social valuation in this presentation and think about the social value of offsets. This is joint work with Frank Venmans from the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at the LSE. And offsets. Okay, so this is a very applied piece which uses some of the models and so forth that we've been seeing in the previous presentations. What are they? Well, they come from various places, and if you emit some carbon somewhere, you can always buy an offset to offset your emissions and leave the world as it was before. They come from places like renewable energy, energy efficiency, forestry, avoided deforestation, something like that, and transport agriculture and so forth. Different technological fixes, perhaps. Okay. But out there, the majority of them are nature-based solutions to climate change, by a long way, in fact, followed by renewable energy and then a bunch of other different offsets there. And this is what really got me into the idea of thinking about the social value of offsets, because I'm interested in sort of forestry and deforestation and conservation of that type. So, the thing is that there are, in terms of the policy context here, there are a lot of commitments that are being made around and about in terms of net zero and the nationally defined commitments. We saw at COP26, the UK, the EU redefining their commitments to net zero. India had set, you know, made similar commitments for 2070. The GFANZ is the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, a group of financial institutions that also made commitments to net zero by 2050. $130 trillion of assets is the valuation of that particular alliance. Even Shell and BP and possibly even Total claim to be net zero on their scope one type emissions by using offsets. So it's an important instrument that is being used, and in many ways some of the drastic reductions in emissions that are going to be required to hit such targets mean that offsets are going, most likely going to be an important part of that net zero strategy. Trouble is, and one should look at the markets as well, right? So this is from the Financial Times, and sort of the prices of different types of offsets have really been shooting up as demands have increased for different types of offsets. The red line, the pink line in the middle there are sort of nature-based offsets, okay? So we're seeing a big demand, an increase in demand. Trouble is that the evidence on in terms of offsets is fairly mixed, right? This is for the voluntary offset market. We could think about compliance market as well, but here's four examples. The ProPublica is sort of a journalistic outlet. They did a study on an important project in Brazil, the Acre project in Brazil, and found that only 50% of the entire offset forest in this case was successful. A paper by Kalel et al., some colleagues of mine from the LSE, found that in the context of the Clean Development Mechanism, only 40% of the projects there were additional. And here was this is more about renewable energy and wind farms, solar power, things like that. Okay. Other sources suggest that 37% of forest-related offset projects were overlapping with protected areas, red plus type reductions of emissions from deforestation and degradation type projects, meaning they weren't additional at all. They would have happened anyway. And then a nice paper by Grayson Badgley et al. Showed that, that many projects overstate the amount of carbon that they actually sequester. And if you think that these are just sort of developing or middle-income country problems, this study is all about California, where the offsets are basically were wrong about the composition of the trees that they were growing. So it's a bit uncertain as to how well offsets are really performing. And so there's a bit of a debate about how much they should be part of the overall net zero strategy. In terms of the compliance market, this paper is just an example by Shrestha et al. Interviewed a bunch of experts In California and China, ETS schemes, they are quite happy with forest offsets. In the EU, they're a bit cooler about that, and they don't allow certain types of forest offsets. The voluntary market, of course, as I've explained, seems to be unregulated, uncertain, and unscalable. And then the science-based targets project, which is really its starting point, are sort of the planetary boundaries and so forth. They don't think that offsets should be used at all in the pursuit of net zero. On the other hand, of course, one shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and there are lots of advice out there on how to deploy offset schemes. If you're going to buy them, you could follow the Oxford principles. There's probably some Cambridge principles out there as well, just for balance. And then you have the task force for the scaling of the voluntary carbon market and the associated Integrity Council, which is all headed up by Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of England, which are trying to harmonise the offset market in some way and give some measures of quality. Okay. So our research question basically is the following. There are clear problems with offsets, and the study there identifies this as well. The key thing that experts were concerned about with regard to offsets and made those and sort of excluded offsets from certain people's agenda were that they were often impermanent. There was a huge risk of failure, as empirical examples showed, and the additionality is always suspect. Okay. So in the context of that, a good question to ask is, do offsets actually have a social value? Do they do anything in terms of improving social welfare, removing damages, and so forth? And then, consequently, should they really be part of any net zero strategy? So that's what this paper is really all about. The other thing that motivated us, we have the market prices, but really we want to know whether there's any social value for these offsets. The other thing that that motivates me, at least, is that as the predominantly nature-based solutions, nature-based offsets can also come along with biodiversity benefits. And as the Dasgupta review from 2021 showed the economics of biodiversity and how the economy is embedded in the environment and so forth, there are other important benefits associated with nature-based solutions. In case you're interested, I wrote a short reflections piece on the Dasgupta review, which is environment and resource economics, and so on. So there's some additional benefits and reasons for thinking about nature-based solutions. Okay, so what do we do in this paper? Basically, in summary, what we show is that the social value of an offset can be reflected by this relatively straightforward formula, which I'm going to walk you through in the rest of this presentation. So the social SVO is our social value of the offset, is some corrected version of the social cost of carbon at time zero, okay? Where it takes into account the delays, the impermanence, the failure risk, and the risk of non-additionality risks. What we can do from this is, of course, this makes all sorts of social offsets, no matter where they come from or how risky they are, sort of comparable in some sense. So we can understand the number of risky and uncertain offsets we might have to deploy, each of which claim to sequester one tonne of carbon, in order to be effectively equivalent to one tonne of permanently sequestered carbon, perhaps through geoengineering. Okay. And that might be a better strategy, actually, because they may well be very, very cheap. In fact, that's why nature-based solutions are a big part of the offset market. We can calibrate this to any of the IPCC representative pathways, climate pathways. And, you know, in broadly speaking, in the model that we use here, the SVO is between zero and the social cost of carbon. Okay, so this is how we do it. Let's think first about what a temporary impermanent removal of carbon would look like in terms of its effect on the climate. So this is from the models that we've seen already in many of the presentations today. At the top, the top diagram tells you about the sort of concentration of carbon dioxide. The bottom one is about temperature effect. So what we're modeling here is an offset which immediately removes in this case, a gigaton of carbon from the atmosphere. And this is the trajectory of concentrations. And in 50 years later, it releases it for whatever reason. You know, the trees go up in smoke or whatever, right? Okay, so you see there's a slightly nonlinear effects going on. This basically comes from a CIMP ensemble of climate models. There's various different versions of this, but the basic story is that when the stock of carbon goes down, actually its absorptive capacity goes down as well, and so you get a little bit of a bounce back in the concentrations compared to what it would have been. And then you get the kind of opposite effect. This is actually the bit that we've seen in many of the studies, in many of the presentations today, is when it's released, there's a kind of quite rapid change, and then there's this kind of gentle decline. Same reasons, higher stock, more absorptive capacity, and so there's this kind of tailing off. In terms of temperature, there's thermal inertia, so this temperature effect is much smoother. And the yellow one here is the FAIR model, which we've seen presented in previous presentations. Okay, so what this tells you is the following: that the temporary removal of carbon here, which is in a sense what an offset could do for us, it can be modelled by a step function, and we're kind of essentially trying to evaluate this step here. There's a delay in the temperature effect, which we can calibrate. It's about 3 years on average, which we can calibrate our step for. Okay, that also, the step function also fits in with the general kind of view that the temperature effect is linear in the cumulative emissions. Okay, which is a model, a typical model, analytical integrated assessment model approach these days. We're following Dietzen, and that's Frank Venman's, my co-author there. Okay. So we can use this sort of structure in order to build up a measure of the value of this temporary offset. Okay, so this is how we do it. So we need to start, you know, back at the beginning and remind everyone, as if you didn't need reminding, that this is a definition of the social cost of carbon. We emit some carbon at some point. It causes effects in the climate, and these cause damages looking forward into the future. And we basically take the present value of all of those damages, okay? So this is the social cost of carbon that we've been talking about. We've got a little delay in there, which is the Greek letter psi, I think, yeah. And it's the sum of all of those marginal damages over the infinite future, okay? So that is our permanent removal of carbon valuation, right? So that's the value that we get from permanently removing carbon from the atmosphere. All right, how about a temporary offset? What's the value of this? Okay, well, imagine we have a project that absorbs from the moment tau 1 and then releases at tau 2. Okay, so that's a sort of duration nu. The social value of this offset is just simply this, the integral of the damages between the point at which the temperature changes and the damages are removed to the point at which the release happens at the end there. So we've got this, it looks like a very similar integral, but it's just truncated around those time periods, okay? Removing the marginal damages. You could rewrite, this effectively is the difference between the social cost of carbon measured at tau 1 and the social cost of carbon at tau 2, okay? So the social value of the offset is just the difference between the present value of these social costs of carbon. We can simplify this even more and say, well, look, and get our correction factor and say, look, well, compared to the social cost of carbon at time zero, which is the eternal riskless permanent removal project, if X is the growth in the social cost of carbon, so you can imagine it's growing from tau 1 to tau 2 at a rate X, then the social value of the offset is simply the social cost of carbon at time zero, discounted at this due to the delay until the offset kicks in, and then this truncation effect because of the impermanence of the offset, the fact that the emissions the carbon is released at the end there. Okay, so this is quite interesting because it's simple, in a sense, simple to calibrate. If we know what the social cost of carbon is, we just need to know how social cost of carbon grows over time and the duration of the offset, and then you've got this corrected valuation. Okay. Of course, we need X and R to be different from one another, the social cost of carbon needs to grow at a rate slower than the discount rate, but that will typically be the case in the simple model that we're using here. Okay. All right, so that's one part, that's one expression. What about a temporary offset with a failure risk, i.e. at any moment the offset could disappear, could go up in smoke, there could be a political change, the property rights could be removed in the country where the offset is happening. Anything like this could happen along the way. Well, this is fairly straightforward to model, so you can just imagine there's a constant probability that an offset goes up in smoke at any moment, and so we have a sort of simple, in a sense, a discount factor that we can attach to this valuation. So that's just similar to a discount rate. We end up having an additional discount rate here, and the correction factor just becomes this extended thing. We have the delay, we have the impermanence, and then we have the failure risk here once we've worked out this integral right there. So again, a simple pricing formula, asset pricing formula, if you like, which relies on knowing how long the duration and also the failure risk at any point in time. Not much more than that. Okay, how about a temporary offset with failure and additionality risk? You know, it could be that our project would have happened anyway. Could have been that it's overlapping with some other project like I was explaining before. Well, there are a couple of cases here. So at the top, here's the idea of failure risk. You've got your offset. It's provided you with a reduction of carbon emissions, and at some point it fails, and then you're back to zero, so it's non-additional anymore. That's what we had before. Non-additionality for a reforestation project looks very similar. You know, you've reforested, and then at any point in time, it could fail for some. It would have been reforested anyway, effectively, and so it becomes non-additional. And that's a sort of uncertain process, but that's a kind of additionality, non-additionality for a reforestation project. For a preservation or conservation project, you know, you're sort of stopping something from being cut down. That's a slightly different arrangement because, you know, you're sort of the non-additionality comes from the fact that maybe it wasn't going to be cut down anyway, and you're just conserving something which would have been conserved anyway. So to begin with, of course, there's non-additionality, but then, oh yes, perhaps it would have been cut down, and suddenly your project becomes additional. Right, so it's a similar kind of thing, but you've got the risk at the start rather than at the end. It makes a slight difference. Okay, so yes, reforestation project, we know that. It's just an additional risk factor. That's sort of lowercase phi, additional to the usual risk project. Conservation project, all the risk is at the end. That becomes slightly different. The likelihood of additionality from a point tau onwards is given by this expression, 1 minus the exponential with the risk factor, lowercase phi tilde. And then the correction factor just simply becomes, well, this is the expression that I showed you in the very beginning here. Okay, so this is essentially a simple expression. Where we have the social value of an offset with all of these different risks is just some corrected version of the social cost of carbon at time zero. And all you need to know are these risk parameters for any given project in order to understand how socially valuable it is. Okay? All right. Sounds straightforward. Is relatively straightforward. But there are some questions we could ask about some of the assumptions I made there. So, for instance, the exponential growth of the social cost of carbon, that's not a given, for instance. Fortunately, we can make a much more general formula here, assuming quadratic damages, for instance, so marginal damages are linear. Then we have this much more general formula for the social value of offsets, where we're just sort of, we're not solving out the integral here, but we can still identify all of these different factors and so on. Couple of good things about this expression is that this is the correction factor, so it's the SVO divided by the social cost of carbon, so it's the sort of relative value of a permanent versus the offset here. Both the damage factor and the total, the gamma is the damage part here, and zeta is the TCRE. In this linear structure that we have here, those two things cancel out. So you don't need to actually You don't need to know what those things are in order to calibrate the correction factor. That's quite handy. All you need are all of these other risk parameters. The other thing about it is you can have a very general kind of structure for how much is absorbed and how much, how quickly the carbon is absorbed and then released. So you can have all sorts of ecological kind of relationships or other relationships in this integral. Okay. So you can do it very, very generally. Indeed. Christian, what time do I have to stop?
You start at 5 minutes before five, so you have another 5 minutes.
I have another 5 minutes, all right. Okay, I'm not sure I can do it in 5 minutes, let's see. Anyhow, what we get from all of this is potential correction factors for all of the different types of offsets. So along here, and also damage functions, right? So we've calibrated this for the Howard and Sternard damage function, and for this is Nordhaus and Moffitt, but the Moffitt didn't.
In fact, you have 10 minutes.
I have 10 minutes, thank you. This is Nordhaus and Moffitt. The Moffitt didn't fit on the in the slide there, unfortunately. Since Professor Nordhaus is in the audience, which doesn't happen very often, let's focus on this column here, shall we? But this is one set of damages, and this is the social cost of carbon, cost of carbon that is associated with those particular assumptions. Here we have the different RCPs, the 2.6, 3.4, and so forth. And here we have all of the kind of correction factors for all of the different risks associated with a particular offset. Now, you can see it varies from, you know, an infinite non-risky offset is basically permanent, that's 100%, down here to something which is only 25 years and has a 50% chance of disappearing at any 0.5, you know, a risk, a hazard rate of 0.5. So how do we use this information? Well, I mean, one way of doing this is that now all offsets which can be calibrated in this way are sort of fungible. So we could say that five of these really kind of quite rubbish offsets down here are equivalent to just one permanent offset, right? So each one of these would be claiming to offset $1, one ton of carbon, but in fact they're only doing a fifth of the job. So you need five of those, okay? You can think about the sort of, you know, the value of the offsets depends on your background scenarios in terms of climate change and so forth, as well as your damage functions. Okay, so this can be interesting in terms of how you think about it. Once we have this information, of course, we can see whether or not this is part of an efficient climate policy. So we can use the benefit-cost ratio, which is the social value of an offset divided by its cost, and order our abatement in terms of those. And yes, sometimes nature-based solutions and offsets, even if they're uncertain, will be a reasonable solution to net, you know, emissions reduction in that sense. So we see this as helping out in terms of emissions reduction. Here's other climate scenarios, and here's the idea of perhaps, you know, 5 times 25-year offsets might be, you know, an easier way of contracting over offsets than just having one infinitely long commitment over a single offset. You know, we might want to have shorter term contracts, which were easier institutionally to sort out. So one can also think about different nature-based solutions. This is a paper from with a team from Cambridge Zoology Department. This is Andrew Bamford and his team and Tom Swinfield, who have looked at the equivalence of different kinds of nature-based solutions. Here we have reforestation, then climate change deterioration. So you've got some sequestering of carbon initially, and then climate change gradually means that particular offset declines and re-releases emissions over time. And several examples here from temporarily reduce deforestation to catastrophes and so forth, different kind of nature-based solutions. And what we're able to do is compare these to a kind of more engineering solution, which would be very, very expensive, but permanent. So, of course, that geoengineering, very expensive, $500. The nature-based solution would be $60. But, of course, it's very uncertain and has these kind of impermanence aspects. Once you correct for that, it costs you $87 for a ton of carbon, and so on. You get the idea. These are all comparable, and you can see that nature-based solutions in this context are fairly competitive compared to the engineering solutions, despite those risks, in terms of their social value. Okay, so that's the essential story. Now, of course, with people like Derek and in the room, and Christian, of course, one can't go on without talking about risk at some point. And so one can think about the social value of offsets when there's different types of risk as well. Here's the social value of offsets in utils, because we have a utility function in here, marginal utility in there. We could have uncertainty in consumption, uncertainty in the amount that's sequestered, and uncertainty in temperatures. And you know, we can work out what the social value of offsets are in those contexts as well, fairly straightforwardly. So because of the linear structure, if you have uncertainty in temperatures, doesn't make any difference. And uncertainty in the Q doesn't make any difference. Uncertainty in consumption, we have a prudence effect here. So actually this increases the social value of an offset, but the correction factor goes down because that more increases the social cost of carbon more. And so on. We could have consumption and temperature positively correlated, and so on. And then we could have correlation between the temperature and the amount sequestered, and these have different effects on the social value of the offsets. Okay. So it's a nice application of the simple economics of climate change, and we think this is a useful contribution. So to conclude, offsets have some value, even though they're impermanent, because they delay emissions, and that's worthwhile. So nature-based solutions can be a competitive technology for an efficient net zero policy. And then we have a bunch of different policy recommendations that we would require, which we think follow from this analysis in terms of how the offset market ought to be regulated and carried out. The Carney Task Force, you know, contracting should take into account the social value of offset. This is one way in which offsets can be compared to one another. They could use this value-based comparison as a correction factor. The risk ratings, these should be disclosed by the providers, or at least by an independent monitor, just in the same way as companies reveal some of their risks and so on. And then the contractual form could be really, really important. You know, maybe 20-year contracts are better than one 100-year contract in terms of just how they can be managed and organized. And that's my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.